Wednesday, August 28th, 2013, the 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. Talking about this, that, and everything else, I'm John Sipes for Radio St. Pete. Let's head for Tampa and a visit with a woman who knew the Kings. Her name is Pat Spencer, and it's been quite a while since we visited. It's good to see you again.
It's nice to see you again, John. Thanks for contacting me.
My pleasure. You are, give me your title.
Director, Area 9, Florida State Conference of the NAACP.
At some point in the very near future, we will talk specifically about the NAACP. In this moment, however, we go back to when you were a girl. Where and who did you know?
I was born and raised in Montgomery, Alabama, and I had the distinct pleasure of knowing Dr. Martin Luther King.
And the rest of the family.
And the rest of their family, yes.
And you had a very special what?
Youth Council Advisor. NAACP Youth Council Advisor.
Rosa Parks.
Yes, Ms. Parks was our advisor, who we met every Thursday afternoon at the library. One of Ms. Parks' favorite things for us to do was to read books. And she had a contest where the person that read the most books always got a prize. And that prize was another book.
Did you usually win?
I won several times. And I still have one of the books that I won. And that was back when I was a teenager.
We'll come back to that in a few moments. It is hard to believe it is 50 years since Dr. Martin Luther King stood in front of the Lincoln Memorial and delivered his I Have a Dream speech, his words ringing through all of history.
That is so true. I was unable to attend that march. My sister went because my mom said she didn't have enough money to pay the way for all three of us. There were three girls. So she had my sister to go to that one. My other sister went to the march on Selma. And I was very privileged to go to the recent march this past weekend.
Your time when you knew the family, share some of those experiences with us.
In Montgomery, Alabama, when Dr. King came to the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, I was a Girl Scout. And the particular afternoon, we were having a Girl Scout meeting, and one of the deacons from Dexter Avenue came in to where we were to introduce us to this young man. And as young girls, we were like, ooh, and awe, because he was rather good-looking. And then the gentleman introduced him and told us he was going to be the new pastor of Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, which was good. I went home, and one of my teachers lived next door, and she was telling me that the new Dexter Avenue pastor and his wife had moved in with some neighbors, so they lived literally four blocks from where I live, and they lived with Irene and Joe Payne. And so we would go around to their house, and we would see him. I got to know him. I got to know Mrs. Coretta Scott King. And then they had Yolanda. I was very privileged to be able to babysit Yolanda every now and then, and that was good. When I was into college, and they had pledging for sorority Zeta Phi Beta. And at that time, they had Hell Week. And Hell Week, they usually give you a lot of crazy things to do. But they selected keeping Yolanda King in the dorm for a week. And we took turns taking care of her so that the Kings wouldn't be worried about her being at home, because there was so much craziness going on and fires and bombings and things around Montgomery during the time. So that was just an honor to be able to do that. We also attended First Baptist Church, where Reverend Ralph Abernathy, a very close friend and confidant of Dr. King, was the minister. So that was rich history, I think, and I remember it all well, like it was yesterday.
You had the opportunity to work, I guess, in the church office also, and that's where you knew him too?
No, not in the church office. It was the Montgomery Improvement Association office, and where we lived, if you go out the back and go through the back fence, you could go into the office because it faced the opposite street from us. I would go in and address envelopes and stuff envelopes and do filings and things, and that was a very good experience because you were doing that for Dr. Martin Luther King. So he did not carry himself as though he was the person we knew him to be. He was a very innocent, a very humble, a very friendly person because he would talk with anybody, and he did not have himself up on a high horse or anything like that, which endeared you to him even more.
Very early in my career, I think I shared this with you, I did not shake his hand, but I was with a group of others. I worked at NBC News very early in my career, and he was there for the Today Show one time, and I had the opportunity to didn't talk to him, didn't shake his hand, wasn't introduced to him, but I was with a group when he was coming into the studios for an interview, and I had an opportunity to stand this close, as close as we are, very close. I was that close to him, and for just a few moments. The one thing I can say is that everyone in the group had something to say, and yes, he did respond, but for the most part, he said the least of any of them. He was quite a humble man.
Yes, he was. That was, like I said, that was one of the things that endeared you to him, was the fact that he was not puffed up or anything. He was very humble.
I don't want to put words into your mouth, but you made an observation to him.
I remember seeing him because at that time, as young girls, we used to have the back of our neck, we would call it edge, and we would go to the barber shop. And he went to the same barber shop I was, that I went to. And I remember one day saying to him, and it was actually true, I said, when I look at you, I see a halo over your head. And he thought that that was just the most remarkable thing. And he said, oh, no. And I said, yes, I do. And I actually did, because there was just something about him that made him stand out from any other man that I ever saw.
We will come back to Dr. King in a few moments. Let's go back to Rosa Parks again. What kind of lady was she?
Mrs. Parks was a very humble lady as well. She was a seamstress at a store. I would compare it to a Dillard's or a Macy's. It was called Montgomery Fair in downtown Montgomery, Alabama. She was a seamstress there where she went to work every day. She was a secretary of the NAACP in Montgomery, and she was also the youth council advisor. She had a very soft-spoken voice, and she, too, had a smile that endeared you to her. She was kind, warm, and friendly toward everybody, and she loved children.
That day when history was made, she did not want to go to the back of the bus. I don't want to leave this as well, that story.
As far as I remember, Mrs. Parks told us that she had gotten off work and she was tired. She got on the bus, paid her fare like everybody else, and took a seat. When the white gentleman got on the bus, and there were other seats on the bus, but they were behind the line. Those days, they had a line on the bus, and if white people got on the bus and there were no seats in front of the line, any blacks on the bus had to get up and go to the back. And she said that since there were other seats, she did not feel like she needed to get up, and she was tired, and she had sat down, so she did not get up. And this is when she was arrested, and that's the beginning of the bus boycott. And we had many, many different meetings. Every night there was a meeting at a different church, and you would have thought that it was the only meeting because you had hundreds of people every night at different churches around the city. The ladies that went to work at for the white people stopped riding the bus and started walking, and they would walk in groups. Every morning you would see a group of them walking to work rather than get on the bus.
As I understand it, it was not a premeditated decision on her part. It was just a spontaneous event because she was tired.
It was a spontaneous event because she was tired, and we all, well, not all, but most of us know it. She was not the first person that did not give up a seat on the bus, but she was the first one that ended up being arrested for not giving it up.
And that set off I'm reluctant to use the word, but I'm going to use it anyway, a firestorm of protest.
Yes, it was, yes. And I was a freshman in college at that time. And one of the college professors, who's deceased now, Miss Thelma Glass, had us working to, at that time, you didn't have copy machines like they have today. They had the mimeograph machines where you had to turn the handle and put the paper in and make the copies. Well, we made copies of flyers, and as students, we went out and circulated those flyers throughout the city for people not to ride the bus. Mm-hmm. And it worked. People did not ride the bus for over 300 days.
That helped to change the world as well.
That helped to change the world. And the bus that Mrs. Parks was on, I've been on that bus. It's at the Ford Museum in Dearborn now. And last year I had a chance to visit Detroit, and I was able to go and sit in the same seat that she was sitting in that she didn't get up.
Is she still with us?
No. I was pleased and privileged to go to her funeral several years ago in Detroit, mm-hmm. because she had moved to Detroit and was living there.
Let's go back to Dr. King. That day, 50 years ago, Wednesday, I have a dream. Those words, these years later, what do they mean to you?
Well, now, and I saw a comic strip in the paper this morning that says on the one side, in 1963, Dr. King was standing up saying, "I have a dream." In 2013, you go to the polls to vote, and they say, "Where's your ID?" So you may have a dream, but you have to have an ID in order to try to vote some new policies and things to come into effect. But I think his "I have a dream," it just spoke for so many people about what we were dreaming of being, people being together, children playing together, the world being a better place. It was a dream that should have been more filled than it has been.
Have we made progress?
Progress has been made, but it's you could say it's a dream in progress, because the dream has not been fulfilled, but progress has been made, and that's always a good thing.
What needs to be accomplished in your mind to fulfill that dream?
I think, again, people have to be able to get along better. The fact that we have the first black president has upset so many people, and it shouldn't be. People are disagreeing with what President Obama says, no matter what it is. And I feel that it's because he's black. And if the dream was coming true or had been fulfilled, I don't think that would still be.
Very respectfully, if it had not been for a significant number of white votes, he would not have been elected, though.
That is very true. But the people that voted for him are not the ones, I think, that's doing this. But some friends of mine, we were talking, and we were saying that some white people voted for him knowing in their heart and wishing in their heart that he would not have won. That way, then they would have been able to say, "He didn't win, but I voted for him," and it backfired on them.
Are there any specific suggestions, recommendations, thoughts from your heart that would affect change as we move forward? That, you know, I don't know whether it would take 5 years, 50, 100, or 200 years, but that that dream would be realized.
I don't know exactly how it's going to work, but we have got to come together as a people. And when I say as a people, I don't mean as black people or as white people, but as a people, all people. We need to come together. We need to look at what would make the world a better place. We need to look at the needs of all people. We don't need to have people wanting to have jobs and not able to have jobs. We don't need to have people hungry. We don't need to have people without proper clothes to wear to cover their bodies and all. We just need to look at everybody and treat everybody as we would want to be treated ourselves. And I think that would go a long way into fulfilling the dream.
Is there anything at all in your heart you would like to be able to say before we wind this down?
I would just like to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to share some thoughts with you. And I thank you again for thinking about me. And it's been a few years, and you remembered me. So when I got the phone call, I said, "Well, this is very good. Somebody remembers." And it's always nice to have somebody nice remember you. So I thank you very much, John.
Your name again is Pat Spencer, and she has a title.
I'm director of Area 9, Florida State Conference, NAACP.
God bless you.
Thank you, and same to you. God bless you too, John.
Here, there, and everywhere, talking about this, that, and everything else. I am John Cypress. for Radio St. Pete.